We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's a good way to ease into your Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Cranking out 50,000 watts, you can listen worldwide by getting the app at 810WHB.com. It's a beautiful morning in Kansas City and across the Midwest, although the forecast said we could have some showers or thunderstorms later this afternoon or this evening. But we'll enjoy it for now. Hope you're up if you're out taking the kids to soccer games or lacrosse games, or you're heading out for a round of golf or whatever you're doing. Kevin Keatsman just walked by. He's in here on a beautiful Saturday.
He is.
Might have a little work to do. I don't know.
Oh, well.
I hope he's going out to play golf, though. It's going to be a good day to do it.
Shane was there early this morning, too.
But not because he wanted to,
no,
right?
Nope, but that's okay.
This is Sports Saturday. We will be here until noon, giving you 3 hours of great content. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show today. Before we get into the news, let's set you up with our guest lineup. It's a pretty good one. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, David Ficklin is going to join us. If you don't know David, he's the guy who works behind the scenes to get stuff done in Kansas City. When Sporting KC was building the new stadium out in Kansas City, Kansas, he was the lead on that project. Does a lot of other projects for Sporting KC. He is also the executive director of Kansas City's World Cup 2026 bid. Now, that seems like it's a long ways off, but it takes a long time to organize hosting a World Cup. And David Ficklin is kind of in charge. Of course, it's, you know, Kathy Nelson with the Sports Commission and all the executives with Sporting KC and the Kansas City Chiefs. They're all working together on this bid. They're encouraging people to sign the petition on their website, KC World Cup 2026. And they're asking for volunteers, asking for donations, but it's something I'm excited about because I'm a huge soccer fan. And I really thought the U.S. was going to get the World Cup in 2018 or 2022. And then Qatar came in and started dumping piles of cash and handing out gifts to the FIFA voters.
What a joke.
FIFA and the International Olympic Committee, the two most corrupt organizations you can think of in terms of just taking cash for bids. We'll take cash, we'll take watches, we'll take cars, we'll take vacations, whatever it is, but we want to be nice because we want World Cup 2026 to come to the U.S. and we want Kansas City to be one of the host cities. So David Ficklin is working on that bid very hard right now. So we'll have David on here in about 20 minutes. At 10 o'clock, Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star, will join us, and we'll get into what happened last night in just a second, but the Royals have been continuing to lose games. They've been making roster moves. They're gearing up for the draft, which is it Monday, I believe?
Monday, yes.
It's rolling on Monday on MLB Network. Royals have the number 2 overall pick, so we'll talk with Lynn about that. And 11 o'clock, Aaron Torres, who has been a guest on our show before, Fox Sports Radio, Kentucky Sports Radio. He writes for several publications, but he's got his, he calls it.
And he has his own podcast, Aaron Torres Podcast.
Yes, he has his own podcast.
Good, so.
And he's got his new, he calls it My Way Too Early College Basketball Top 25.
His college basketball takes are great. So really excited. He had an interesting thing about RJ Hampton too.
Yep.
So that's going to be fun.
It's always an interesting exercise to come up with a top 25 when he published this on May 30th. So it wasn't even June yet. And look, these things are for fun. They're experimental. They're in no way meant to say, here's how I think the whole season's going to end and where these teams are going to rank. No, it's just kind of where everybody stands right now with graduations, with people leaving early for the NBA, with kids transferring out, with kids deciding to stay, with healthy players coming back, with the NCAA ruling that some players can come back. So it's an interesting exercise. So we'll talk with Aaron Torres at 11 o'clock about all of that. All right, let's start with the Kansas City Royals. And there's really not a lot to have a beef about on most nights because the Royals just aren't very good. When they lose, It's because they're not very good. They lose close games. They don't win many games at all. Last night had a 2-0 lead in Arlington. Danny Duffy was absolutely cruising. He was getting strikeouts. He was getting ground balls. He was locating. His slider was nasty. And okay, this is the Danny Duffy we've seen for the previous six starts. It's been fairly consistent. Where does Danny Duffy traditionally get in trouble? At what point in the game? In most of his starts, you might see it at the end of the fifth, but the sixth inning is generally where he wobbles a little bit. And Danny Duffy not only wobbled, he got blasted. So he starts the sixth inning, walks the leadoff batter, and that's kind of my red alert sign, like, uh-oh, we should be on standby here because something very bad can happen if you're walking the leadoff batter. Then comes back with a strikeout. Okay. Evening out a little bit. Gives up a single. Got runners on the corners. Gives up an RBI single. Still have runners all over the place. Hunter Pence gets on base to load the bases. Infield single. Mazzara walked, and that walked in a run. So if the bases are loaded, Danny Duffy's already got one walk in the inning. Then he walks with the bases loaded to bring in a run. That should be, you know, you're at the door of the airplane. Let's jump out and pull the ripcord here. We need to get a handle on this game while we still have it. And then boom. Joey Gallo, who's having a monster season for the Texas Rangers, by the way, cranks a home run 457 feet. I mean, I'm not sure the Royals outfielders even budged on it. I wouldn't have. It was high and deep, and it was way out, and it was a grand slam.
I mean, it was a fastball 91 over the middle outside half of the plate.
That was called a pipe shot.
For a Joey Gallo who is long and likes to get extension on his swing and likes to pull the ball, that was the perfect placement for him to place the barrel on the bat, and that thing was long gone. Just like that, snap, two outs, grand slam.
That's the textbook definition of either dead red or a pipe shot. Just right down the pipe.
I mean, I don't know.
But you're walking,
I mean,
guys.
I don't understand why this happens all the time, at least from when I've watched the Royals when Ned Yost has been the manager. He always tries to get that last ounce. There's two outs left.
Yes.
He likes the matchup lefty on lefty, even though it is their best power hitter. Danny Duffy's been leaving balls up in the zone, and that's what will happen.
Yes.
It doesn't matter sometimes about the matchup. If a ball is coming in at 91, even if it is a lefty on a lefty, over the middle half of the plate, that's not it's not like the Danny Duffy that was throwing early in his career 95, 96, sometimes 97. That's not what he is anymore. He's more of a finesse pitcher now in terms of he's using a lot more off speed, not using that power fastball that he had early in his career because he's taking velocity off of it. So I'm just frustrated, not at Danny Duffy as much, because you saw he was starting.
Saw it coming.
You saw it coming, and Ned Yost was like, you know, let's see if we can get through this, and it didn't work out.
No.
So it just seems like time and time again, when the Royals get into these situations, it's almost a pitch too late or a batter too late.
Well, you remember the knock on Ned Yost early on, when he was managing the Royals and did not have the greatest bullpen of all time, he would leave a guy like a Jeremy Guthrie in too long, or, you know, a veteran guy in to a Jason Vargas too long. And he would say, well, I was trying to get him the win. Or I was trying to get him a complete game. I thought we could get him through eight. He did this over and over and over again. Then he got the greatest bullpen in the world and became easy. We're done after six. We got 7, 8, and 9 lined up and ready to go almost every night. Doesn't have that luxury anymore. I'm sorry. He doesn't. And when you see Danny Duffy he walks the leadoff guy, loads the bases, issues a walk with the bases loaded to bring in a run, that's red alert danger right there. He's got to be out of the game. Should have had somebody ready. So now it's 6-2. Are the Royals a team that are going to come back with four runs in the last three innings? Probably not. Four runs to tie, 5 to win. No. So at that point, for me, the game's over. I mean, which it turned out to be, but in my mind when I'm watching it, that's it. ballgame. You got Boxberger in there to try to clean up the mess. He did okay. He got a strikeout, issued a walk, got another strikeout. So he did okay. But leaving Danny Duffy, and then after the game, Ned Yost says something along the lines of, well, you know, he was on cruise control, and I thought, boy, you know, if he can get out of this in the sixth, he can cruise right through the seventh. Like, what evidence What evidence do you have that that's going to happen? There's none.
I guess because of pitch count. His pitch count going into the sixth was pretty good. I think it was in the low 70s, if I'm not mistaken, or something of that nature going into the sixth inning.
Ended up with 93 pitches, so it would have been the upper 70s.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I understand that, but Duffy is not the guy who, when there's turmoil, that he's all of a sudden going to get out of it. It's usually when he starts going downhill, he goes downhill. It's hard for him, at least mentally, to bring himself out of that.
Right. And it should be painfully obvious. I'm not sure I need to make a big deal out of this when a team's on its way to 100 plus losses, and this is, you know, the end of May, early June. But it's frustrating because when you hear that after the game, well, he was cruising. I thought he'd get out of it and he'd go right through the seventh. No. That ship sailed 2 years ago. That's gone. Okay.
And I haven't been one to blame Ned Yost this season just because of the cards he's been dealt
not a lot of talent.
In terms of what he's working with.
Yeah.
But when you have things you can be in control of like that, when you can clearly, you're up 2-0, you see the game kind of getting out of hand. All right, maybe we need to make a call to the bullpen. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not looking great, and he decided not to do that. So that's one. This is one instance where you can put it on Ned Yost.
Absolutely.
And I think the most frustrating thing for me is, at least with Ned Yost, at least, is he never puts the blame on himself. And at least in press conferences, and from what I've heard, you know, Andy Reid always says, "Hey, this is on me." Like he always puts the blame on himself.
You can say Ned was taking the blame when he said, "I thought he could."
Yeah, but I don't think he is very apparent about it. He doesn't think it's on him. At least from when I hear him talk a lot of the time, not like an Andy Reid esque kind of, all right, this one's on me, I should have done better to put these pieces together or do this and this.
Right.
But I mean, I just think I'm not a lot this season. I haven't really put anything on Yost because, as I said before, the pieces haven't been there. It's a bad team. There's not a lot of
the
pitching's horrible. It's not great. And it's not just, it's as we said, I think last time on Baseball Tonight, if it's not pitching one night, there's no run support the next. There's not
three guys striking out four times.
Yeah.
By the way.
Or it's something on the base paths.
Right.
Or it's and something in the field or an error or errors or something like that. So, I mean,
you go back to the start because the building blocks were not there. Now, look, there's talent on this team. The top of the order, pretty good. 1-5, 1-6, decent. The bottom is where this team has sucked. I mean, Chris Owings being on this team as long as he had, terrible. I don't understand why Terrence Gore is on this team. He gets picked off and thrown out all the time. He's supposed to be the fastest guy, but maybe not the best base runner. Billy Hamilton, he's been playing better lately, but that hasn't been great. I'm not sure what the other options were. I'll give you a positive note from our friend David Leske, Baseball Prospectus, writing about the bullpen or tweeting out about the bullpen last night. With the current bullpen players, they've thrown 71 and a third, 61 hits, 83 strikeouts, that's a 28% K rate, 27 walks, which is a 9% walk rate, which is pretty good, 0.9 home runs per nine innings, and a 4.04 ERA. So the bullpen, since they had to ship guys out and try to get it realigned again, has been a little bit better, but I digress. The Royals tonight against the Rangers. You've got baseball tonight at 1 o'clock, is that right?
Or 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Which I forgot it was Champions League final today, which kind of disappointed about. But yeah, we're gonna have some fun with baseball tonight. Get you all geared up for Rangers Royals this afternoon. It's probably gonna be a hot one, steamy. Playing I think 3:05 or 3:15 game.
Arlington
in Arlington
daytime.
In the that is not fun. And they're playing a day game tomorrow. So yes. It's not quite like what it would be like in June or July, but something
they adjust. They move their games 30 minutes later at night, and then they move the Sunday games to night games.
Yeah.
But not now.
I think you're going to expect a lot more for the rest of this series, a lot of the long ball again. That's a ballpark where the ball seems to just fly out in Arlington. So, at least one positive, Chester Cuthbert getting a home
playing
run opposite field.
Yep.
Went 1-for-4, and he had a great play at third base.
Yes, he did.
The one thing we do know is he is a good fielder, he's good in the field.
Yep.
So that's one positive.
All right, so that's the Royals. Baseball tonight coming up at 2 o'clock. A little bit on the Chiefs and the OTAs. I was reading Matt Derrick over at ChiefsDigest.com just to get a couple of notes. And before I get into all that, I've got to put the brakes on something that the national media is jumping on. And I realize, and we addressed this a little bit last week, I realize that when you're at the end of May, early June, OTAs are boring. You have to generate something controversial, something that gives you clicks on your website, someone that gives you listens on your podcast or tuning into your TV show. There is a growing narrative about Patrick Mahomes regressing, and I don't know where it's coming from, other than the fact people need attention. Is he going to throw 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards again? I don't know. That's a hard number. But if he throws less than that, I'm not going to call that a regression. He's got things he's working on. Talk about it with Matt Derrick. He's got to work on his footwork. And one of the Chiefs coaches was asked about a possible regression. He said, nope. You know why? Because Patrick Mahomes can take hard coaching. They don't have to baby Patrick Mahomes. They're at the workouts and their OTAs. They're at training camp up in St. Joe. The coaches are getting on him. Kafka is the quarterback's coach. They're getting on him. Say, Patrick, your footwork is bad. You know why you threw that interception? Bad footwork. He doesn't mind hearing that. He wants to be the best. The best do not mind hearing it. But I don't get this national narrative. Oh, Patrick Mahomes can't possibly do that again. Well, probably not. They were astronomical numbers, but that doesn't mean that it's a regression. It just doesn't. It chapped my ass. I heard it 3 or 4 times in the last 2 or 3 weeks. All these national guys. I'm not buying that for a second. I'm just not. You can go sell it. Who's buying it? How many people around, how many fans are looking at Patrick Mahomes saying, well, he can't do that again. He's going to suck in 2019. He's going to regress. I don't care if his numbers aren't as astronomical.
I think it's all coming from what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill, not having Kareem Hunt for a full season. Also, having a full year of tape on him, defenses being able to prepare more. And yeah, I understand that, but he is also going to get better through film study, having Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy. Hopefully Travis Kelce's ankle doesn't, hamper him. He had surgery to clear that up. So hopefully that, if he goes down, that's when I might start to concern a little bit, be concerned a little bit, because I don't really have too much depth at tight end. But yes, of course you're going to see a little bit of a regression, but
I guess I don't like that word because that implies he's not going to be good.
No. A slight regression in stats, but if he still wins games and maintains a level of, if Mahomes wins 11 or 12 games this year, then he has not regressed.
No.
He has not regressed.
You get home field for the AFC Championship game and then figure it out from there. You mentioned wide receiver. again, noting Matt Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com. Byron Pringle has been a standout in OTAs. Now, let me qualify that. These are guys running around in their shorts and their helmets. I don't even think they have shells on yet. So this is the gym class of football practices. It's flag football for football practice. But if a guy's catching the balls he's supposed to, if a guy's going out to get something that maybe is just out of his reach, that's a positive sign. Byron Pringle was at K-State. I always liked to watch him. He did get a case of the drops on occasion. But I think he's pretty darn good. And he was good in preseason last year right up until he got hurt. So he had to miss the year. So I'm excited about that. You're looking at other guys. I don't think anybody expects Sammy Watkins to play 16 games, even though he says, I'm in the best shape of my career. It's the old training camp line. You hear it at spring training with the Royals. You hear it at training camp with the Chiefs. I'm in the best shape of my career. I went out and did some things to make sure that I stay healthy. Okay. I'm not taking that to mean 16 games. I'm just not. It hasn't been there. So guys like DeMarcus Robinson got to step up. He had pretty good communication with Patrick Mahomes last year. I'm not sure he slots into a number one position if they need him. But he'll have to step up. He's at that point in his career where, what's the magic year mark, the four-year mark, where a team has to decide if they're going to keep you or you're done because you're not productive enough. So DeMarcus Robinson needs to step up and have an above-average year. Byron Pringle, if he's healthy, is going to be called on to step up. One of the things the Chiefs wide receiver coach spoke about this week is the fact that all these guys have to play all the positions. You have to play the X, you have to play the Y, you have to play the slot. You got to play it all. So if a Sammy Watkins can't go, DeMarcus Robinson slides over. Then Byron Pringle goes in there. You know, other guys, I don't know if Gary Dieter's ever going to be something, but I don't know. I'm just indifferent about Gary Dieter. I know he's best friends with Mahomes, but whatever.
I think also, the most important skill set for a receiver, at least in today's NFL, it's not about, you know, straightaway speed. I don't know if you saw the video of DK Metcalf trying to run a route.
Yes.
Yeah, he ran like a 4.3 at the combine, but his cone drill and his lateral ability.
It's awful.
Awful. Yes. Horrible.
And I feel bad for the kid because he's getting destroyed on Twitter.
As long as guys have soft hands and can catch Mahomes' balls and can get separation and know the offense, I think the Chiefs will be fine. Yeah, you might not have as many breakout plays if you know that you would see with a Tyreek Hill or many 60-yard plays down the field, but as long as you keep moving the chains and keep the ball in Mahomes' hands, I'm fairly confident that this team is going to score a lot of points this season. That's just from at least what I've seen. In today's NFL, if you can get separation, and that's the most important thing, getting separation, being able to run crisp routes, and being able to catch a Mahomes ball that is coming at you very, very fast.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so Chiefs will be back for more OTAs beginning Monday. They'll have 4 days of that. And again, Matt Derrick will have great coverage, ChiefsDigest.com, and tell you who looks good in shorts and helmets. So nothing, you don't really get anything concrete until you get to that, until you get to training camp in St. Joe. All right, Sporting KC in action tonight. 7:30 kickoff down in Houston. You can hear that live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Buchady will be on the call. And it'll be up to Sporting to, man, that game Wednesday was awful against the Galaxy. Just awful. And this was coming off a pretty exciting win over Seattle last weekend. 3-2.
Good team, too, in Seattle.
Seattle's a really good team.
They're very good.
Yeah, second place in the West, I believe. But that game Wednesday against Galaxy was awful. Just terrible. I wouldn't say unwatchable because I love soccer. I'm going to watch it all. But getting to that point where it was like, oh, this is bad. And then Zlatan scores and blah, blah, blah. That
Johnny Russell kind of gets injured. They said they said it wasn't a hamstring pull or something. He said someone kneed him in the back of in the leg. So hopefully it's just a contusion or bruise, not a strain or anything like that.
He's questionable for tonight's game in Houston. And look, this is a tough stretch. Not only did you just play some good teams, you got four games on the road now, in a row. Sporting's not playing a home game this month. Sporting is the only team also that has not won a road game. Only team in the Western Conference that has not won a road game. And you've got four in a row. 11th place in the Western Conference. 4 points out of a playoff spot. That's the positive, I guess. But you got four games on the road. And you're getting into June. And this thing isn't working out right now, and it's a lot of it has to do with injuries. I get that. I understand that. But you got to be able to pick up some points. you got to be able to get something here this month in these four road games. Or you're going to come back home in July and you might be putting a fork in it. Plus, you got the U.S. Open Cup coming up. Mix that in there. Good thing for Sporting tonight, they get Christian Namath back. He got the red card that he got the one-game suspension for, and then the league came back, I believe, Tuesday and gave him a second game, which that's not really fair when a team is trying to prepare for the LA Galaxy and you come to him the day before. We're going to add a second game onto that red card suspension. Okay.
I think the one positive, though, Johan Quaze is played very well up top at that number nine role, at least in the Sounders game, and opening up opportunities and trying to create up there when you thought earlier in the season, playing like four different positions, that this might not work out. This signing might not be great, as great as we thought it was going to be.
Right.
So
having Namath available for that game Wednesday would have made a difference.
Absolutely.
I'm confident
absolutely
in that.
Yeah.
So he's back tonight. He gets some of their Matt Beisler's back. I know he got dinged up a little bit, but he should be good to go. We'll see if Graham Zusi is good to go for tonight. I believe he's on the questionable list. Still no Roger Espinosa, though, and that's been a huge loss for Sporting KC. Just huge.
Midfield hasn't been the same.
No, not at all. It was better when they got Benny Failhaber, when they traded and got Benny and brought him back. It got better. But without Roger, it's missing something. All right, on that note, we'll take a quick timeout. Speaking of soccer, is the World Cup coming to Kansas City in 2026? I think so. I'm confident it will. But we'll talk to the man who's in charge of this group of executives putting this bid together to get Kansas City as one of the, we think there are going to be 10 host cities in the United States. And Kansas City, we hope, is on that list. It's up to FIFA. You never know with FIFA. You just don't. And they could pick Paducah, Kentucky. We just don't. Actually, they're not on the list. I'm being sarcastic, but they make weird decisions. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll speak with David Ficklin, Executive Director of World Cup 2026, coming to Kansas City, we hope. So that's coming up next. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hi, Chris, who is this?
This is a group called Alabama Shakes.
Oh, and gosh, I should have known that.
More.
That's great. Boy, I don't know her name, the lead singer and guitar player. She's fantastic.
Yeah, I saw them in concert. Actually, at Sporting KC at Children's Mercy Park.
There you go.
It was awesome.
Right. There you go.
And it was awesome.
Which is a nice transition to this segment. By the way, this is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show, and our guest for this half hour is David Ficklin, who wears many hats, executive director of Kansas City's World Cup 2026 bid, director of development with Sporting KC. What are all your titles?
I am full time on
The World Cup.
Cup bid.
Okay,
yes.
But you're at Sporting all the time, though, right?
Well,
all
I
the
spent
games.
11 years helping build that club into what it is today, and it will always be my club. And I have dear friends there, and I care passionately about how the boys do every week on the field. So,
but now you get the next
challenge. Intrinsically part of Sporting, I think.
Now you get the next challenge. By the way, full disclosure: Dave and I's kids go to school together, have for a long time. So I don't know if I needed to disclose that. Just whatever.
I don't think we're conducting any financial transactions.
No,
for
not
which
at all.
We need disclosures, but
okay. So World Cup 2026. I have said this many times on this show, and I'll say it to my friends: I am confident Kansas City is going to be a host city for the United States portion of it. I believe there's going to be 10 host cities.
That's correct.
I'm very confident in this, but I'm not the one who's organizing the effort and putting this thing together. So tell me where you kind of stand right now in terms of the process and dealing with FIFA and everybody else who's involved with making these decisions.
Thanks, Brad. And let me first say just thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
I listen to you all the time, so it's actually fun to be here in the studio.
I appreciate it.
Let me start by saying that we approach it like Yogi Berra once did. It's never over until it's over.
right?
And yes, we think we have the best city here, and we have the best facilities, and it would be more than a shame if games weren't played here in 2026. It would be terrible.
Right.
but we take nothing for granted. And so we're going to be working as absolutely hard as we can for the next 2 years or so to do a couple of things. Really, to win a World Cup bid, you need to have a technically fantastic set of bid documents. Now, those will never win you a bid, but they could lose you.
Okay.
They could lose you a bid. So we put a lot of effort. We'll put a lot of effort into those. And, you know, FIFA ranked all the cities in all kinds of different categories as part of the overall 2026 decision when the United bid was going up against Morocco. And so, you know, we got some high scores and we got some lower scores. And so we knew we would, and, you know, we're working to address those in a satisfactory manner so that when FIFA does come into town and we present to them, we'll be able to say, we have this plan, and because we've been involved in Olympic planning and World Cup planning and other major events, we're going to take all of our technical planning past the point that they're going to expect. And hopefully they're not listening this morning.
I don't think people in Zurich are listening to the show.
Well, that's a shame. They should be. We're going to take it 2 years past in planning so that it's really an, oh my goodness, these guys have it down. They know what they're doing better than any other city. So it's really to over-deliver on our technical aspects. And then there needs to be just not just strong civic and governmental support. There has to be vocal support. And then we as a region have to show that we desperately want the games.
Mm-hmm.
And that manifests itself in ways such as what's coming up with the Women's World Cup watch parties, mm-hmm. you know? 4 years ago when the U.S. played Japan in the Women's World Cup final, if you were at the live block, it was packed. You didn't know the difference
between
if you were at a Men's World Cup final or a Women's World Cup final. It was incredible. And now we're trying to do that same amazing display of support for the very first U.S. game in the first round. And the reason is because Fox knows that we do great things here in Kansas City.
They always put a camera at P&L.
They've got a camera. And so if we can have a good crowd there when the U.S. scores, they're going to show Kansas City going crazy. And it gives us a chance to really stake out a leadership position with all our competing bid cities to say, you know, we support soccer. Everyone knows the people here support sporting. But we support soccer, men's, women's, international soccer. Right. It doesn't matter. And so opportunities like that are great for the whole city to come in and show that we support efforts like this, and we show up to show the world that we are a passionate soccer city.
All right, we're speaking with David Ficklin, executive director of the Kansas City World Cup 2026 bid. One of the things you wanted to stress a little bit is, okay, we all get what the World Cup is. It's the biggest sporting event in the world. It's the best countries playing the best soccer in the world. But one of the things you want to stress is for an event like this, this big, it can't just be about soccer. It's got to be about something bigger in Kansas City and the region, and you know, Lawrence and Columbia and Topeka, and just throw out all the cities around us. And it's got to be bigger than just soccer.
It is. And it's soccer is just the tool, if you will, in this case, to bring this incredible event that it should, you know, there's 10 U.S. cities and there are 60 games to be played in the U.S., so we should each get 6 matches. And if you think, you know, hosting a World Cup match is very similar in a lot of ways to hosting a Super Bowl. And then you go, well, okay, this is an opportunity to host 6 Super Bowls
six times.
About 30 days.
Right.
That's incredible. But more than that, they have World Cup matches have tens of thousands of international visitors that come in, and people travel for the World Cup. If you look at, you know, this last World Cup in Russia, where Russia's not the easiest country to get to,
no.
and
or travel through.
yes, and just for lots of different reasons, language barrier being a big one. The top 10 visiting countries, I think England might have been 10, mm-hmm. with over 30,000 English going to Russia. And, you know, Brazil and some of those countries that it's bigger than soccer, is bigger than religion and politics and life combined, right?
Right.
And, you know, 60 and 70,000 international visitors. And those people want to be at that game that their cities, that their country's playing, and they come to those cities. So if you think that with six games, there's a chance for 12 different nations to come to each of the host cities, and then you think, well, tens of thousands of visitors for each of those nations, they're going to come in for a couple days, and then they're going to go on to the next. So it's an incredible opportunity to bring tens of thousands of people into Kansas City and let them in on our wonderful secret. But then the other thing is the international television ratings are, for a standard World Cup, are higher than the Super Bowl's international ratings. So they're just under 200 million a game just for the opening round game. So you say, you know, 200 million times six games, it's over a billion possible television viewers. So we couldn't, there's nothing that we could do to buy that type of exposure. And a dear friend of mine, Hank Steinbrecher, who was in charge of U.S. soccer during the 1994 and the 1999 World Cups, and is in the Soccer Hall of Fame and is really one of the great builders of the game, he said something that really resonated with me recently. And he said, you know, more than the economic impact of a World Cup, the World Cup is the lens, or the World Cup is the window in which the world perceives your city. And it's a chance to increase our visibility and let people see that, you know, this isn't flyover country. There's incredible, incredible landscape here, arts and cultures, everything that all the listeners know that makes this area so wonderful. A lot of the country doesn't think that way, doesn't know about us, let alone the world. So it's a chance to create visibility and awareness beyond anything we could imagine.
And Kansas City is an international city. So whatever countries would happen to come here to play, there's a community that would support that that team and those fans and invite them in and share the food and the music and all that kind of stuff. I was captivated by World Cup 94 because, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know anything about soccer. I played it as a kid, but we played in the era where dads didn't know anything about the game. And the thing that attracted me to the game, since I didn't understand anything about it and the strategy and all that, I was attracted by all the international teams and seeing people I'd never seen before and hearing languages I'd never heard before. And in particular, the U.S. game against Colombia. And I mean, that team was supposed to steamroll everybody. And Carlos Valderrama and his wild hair. I'm like, I got to be part of this. You're gonna bring in people who have no idea what to expect and are going to get blown away by what they see.
On both sides.
Yeah.
Visitors blown away by what they see about the region. And Kansas Cityans absolutely blown away by all the different cultures. And, you know, I've been to five different World Cups. And
Bragger.
This stands consistent regardless of the continent, regardless of anything. You know, soccer's the international language. If you're a soccer fan, you have something in common with every single person on the planet. Regardless of anything else, you may have nothing, and you may be politically enemies,
right?
But you have something in common, soccer, and you have a way to communicate just by throwing out the names of the great players. And it's yes, the pageantry and the colors and the different cultures. It's all done in joy, and it's an incredible atmosphere. And I want that atmosphere here in our city.
So as we mentioned, this is bigger than, by the way, we're speaking with David Ficklin, Executive Director of the Kansas City World Cup 2026 bid. You mentioned it has to be bigger than soccer. It has to be a regional effort with people outside of the game. So I was looking at your website this morning. I probably looked at it 1,000 times over the last few months. KC2026.com. You got all kinds of things on there, kind of explaining what you guys are doing and also asking for help. You've got donations. You can volunteer and also to sign the petition. And it doesn't matter if you like soccer or not, to just be part of it.
Yes, thank you. It doesn't matter, actually, if you like soccer. We are agnostic. You know, if you right. don't like soccer, sign the petition anyways. Because if you love Kansas City, if you love the Midwest, and you want something amazing to happen to our city and to our region, here's a chance to show it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? By the way, you might actually be surprised if you go to a soccer game. It's kind of fun.
Right.
But it does. It takes more than just the soccer community. It takes our entire community to raise your hand and say, you know, I love our city and I want to do something for our city. And it's easy. You know, it takes about 10 seconds to sign your name on a petition. And that matters because when FIFA comes, we're going to show them these numbers on the petition, and it's going to blow them away how many people sign it. But more than that, well, we do a heat map of where all the signatures come from, because we ask for your zip code. The heat map is the heat is all through the Midwest, from South Dakota to Oklahoma.
That's awesome.
It's absolutely amazing where all these big cities in the Midwest, you see big red heat markers where people, you know, hundreds of people are signing the petition. And when I started talking with some of the heads of the youth soccer associations in our different states, you know, they said, yeah, well, that makes complete sense, because we come to Kansas City so frequently to play games here because we have such great youth soccer facilities. People travel here from all over the Midwest continually for soccer, so it's a natural destination for them. It was much more logical to them than it was to me, but it allowed us to understand that this isn't just a Kansas City bid. You know, when we were bidding against Morocco, really, we said, you know, we exemplify the United bid. We unite two cities and really two states. But now that we've seen the support is throughout the Midwest, it's uniting 10 different states. And so, you know, when you think about it, if we as a nation are hosting the World Cup to grow the game, we can't just do it on the coast, mm-hmm. because we'll leave out a huge part, the heart of our nation. And, you know, the Midwest has, you know, let's just say about 50 million people within mm-hmm. a 1 day's drive. And those people have already started to show that they want soccer here.
Right.
So here's a great opportunity to grow the game by putting games in Kansas City, because the circle is so great. People don't have any other opportunity.
Well, you mentioned just the coast, and we're pretty sure LA and New York are going to be two of the host sites for the
yes.
World Cup. That's common sense. That's economical sense. So I was looking at Kansas City, and you know, this space between the other possible host city, Chicago bailed out. They were not part of the bid.
We are very fortunate,
yes.
in that respect.
And
they're not part of the bid.
I'm glad they were not part of the bid. But you know, I guess Dallas could potentially be the closest, and that's quite a long drive. Cincinnati be relatively close, but you don't really have that heart of the Midwest spot if you don't come to Kansas City.
Exactly, and that will be one of the pillars of our campaign. That here is an opportunity to put games centrally located across, well, look, east-west across the United States, but also north-south across
right.
Canada and Mexico, our two partners in putting on this tournament. But it put games in Kansas City, and you've really introduced the sport to the entire Midwest. And you know, in 1994, Kansas City was one of the last two cities cut from the list of mm-hmm. hosts. So we didn't get it back then. And
I remember that
we
bit
need it now.
Because the Chiefs were willing to cut out corners of the end zones, and maybe even put a field on top of the seats to make sure it was big enough. But it just at that time, it just there wasn't a lot to go on in terms of what you were supposed to do. But now we've had a long time to think about it.
Well, we've had, you know, that's already 25 years ago
yes.
this summer.
Oh my gosh,
we have had a tremendous growth of the game mm-hmm. since then, and we're much more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And maybe no more city than Kansas City has had this incredible growth just in the last decade of what we've seen as possible in soccer in this country. And now you see it all the time in the new MLS cities like Atlanta, where there was no history of soccer to speak of. And then all of a sudden a team begins, and they're selling 70,000
right.
seats on a consistent basis. And it's amazing how to be there in the beginning and see how far we've come and how passionate people are about the sport. And, you know, the millennials have now grown up with soccer and are we don't need to convince them of the legitimacy of the game, right? It's just
right.
part of their lives. And I think that's a big reason that soccer has really ramped up in its popularity. And now millennials are having kids. And so
right.
We have the generation of people who grew up watching the game, passing the game on to their kids. And, you know, baseball's got, what, 7 or 8 generations of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I would encourage our listeners, again, go to the website, kc2026.com. That's kc2026.com. Sign the petition. volunteer, donate, and let's bring the World Cup to Kansas City in 2026. David Ficklin, I know you're running around today. I appreciate you taking time to stop in.
Brad, thank you very much. It's always fun to talk about how amazing our city is. And the great thing about bidding is that you have the opportunity to tell this wonderful story. And you find all the great things about your region, about your city, and you tell the world about it. And it's one of the most uplifting things. And there's great messages that we have in Kansas City. We're really excited about the opportunity to tell it and get people involved. As the greatest civic gesture we could ever do and bring the world's largest sporting event to Kansas City.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking about this a lot over the next couple of years. Good luck and continued success, and get back out of there on the soccer field today. All right.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right, we'll take a time out. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, just a couple of minutes left in hour number one. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Lynn Worthy, Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star, will join us. At 11 o'clock, Aaron Torres will join us. We'll talk some college basketball and college football. Just wrapped up with David Ficklin, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. I've known David for many, many years. Been talking about World Cup 2026 and making sure Kansas City is a city. Chris, I'm a cheerleader for things like this. And as David said, it's not just for soccer fans. It's for the entire region. You don't even have to like soccer. It's an event that you, the likes of which you have never seen before. If you've never been to one of these, you'll be blown away. And like you said, it's the equivalent. If you were to be a host city and you would get six games, that would be the equivalent of six Super Bowls. Think about that. I mean, that just kind of puts it in perspective of how big this is. And how important it is for Kansas City to be one of those host cities.
Yeah, I think it's major. And I think we, as a city, have a better opportunity and have shown that soccer is a huge thing to this city comparative to the other Midwest option that would be a Cincinnati, in my opinion. But it's gonna be a lot of fun. So I'm pretty excited to see the prospect of what is to come in terms of World Cup 2026 possibly coming to Kansas City. But
yeah,
and you just never know.
And I would encourage folks to buy tickets for those Gold Cup games coming up. You have the United States playing against Panama on June 26th, then Guyana and Trinidad and Tobago. That's just going to be another big signal to FIFA how important this is for us and how seriously we take the sport and how bad we want this event. All right, that's going to do it for hour number one. Two more still to come. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.